Welcome to the Aurelium Future Strategy Podcast, the definitive podcast for strategic insights in the world of professional services. This podcast is more than just a discussion forum. It's a strategic compass for firms and professionals seeking to excel in today's dynamic business environment and prepare for the uncertainties of tomorrow. Each episode, we delve into the most compelling aspects of future strategy, from the impact of generative AI and disruptive technologies to innovative approaches across various professional sectors. At the Aurelium Future Strategy Podcast, we bring together the brightest minds in industry and academia, offering you a unique blend of pragmatic insights and expert solutions. Our aim is to empower you with the knowledge and strategies that are both forward-thinking and actionable. Whether you're looking to understand the latest trends, enhance your firm's strategic planning, or gain a competitive edge in your field, this podcast is your essential guide. Tune into the Aurelium Future Strategy Podcast for unparalleled perspectives that will transform the way you think about strategy and the future of professional services.
Welcome to the third episode of the Aurelium Future Strategy Podcast. Before we dive into anything, it's been a wild few days. We've seen ice cream making global news. Formula One, if you are a fan, you'll know what I'm talking about, but it is an absolute shambles. I think the hashtag silly season will be popping up, and it's going to be very interesting to see how the season unfolds with that in mind. Jumping back into what is the flesh and bones of our podcast, the professional service sector, we promised you at the end of the last episode that we will be doing a bit of a deep dive into the billable hour, and that is exactly what we're going to do today. I don't think that it is a stretch to say that the billable hour lies above the entire commercial model of professional service firms. It underpins revenue, expense, and there I'm talking about what it is that the firm can afford. It underpins profit, the workforce, both professionals and non-professionals. Obviously, pricing, and then also performance management and career advancement. We have spoken a lot about Gen AI. We've written a lot about Gen AI. And I think it's safe to say that we can now assume that Gen AI will improve efficiency. What is interesting there is, will that make the billable hour model irrelevant in many, if not all, parts of traditional practice? And really what we have to do then is reconceptualize the commercial metrics and the entire model, which is built and premised on the billable hour. The real question there, though, is how it is that we can make this transition without killing the existing business. Obviously, if something is premised on something, if that is the foundation on which it stands, suddenly ripping that out is not the way to go. So Rob, let's dive into the billable hour. Can you run over what the billable hour is and really how it is that that became the dominant billing method in professional service firms globally?
The billable hour is a very simple metric. It's the value of the hour that has been delivered by the professional service provider in the context of the time that is taken to fulfill a particular task. In very simple forms, if you instruct me to do a particular job, you ask me to draft a contract. That contract took me 2 hours to draft. Well, then I send you a bill for those 2 hours. That's the billable hour. It's 2 billable hours of my time that signifies the amount that you will pay me for that particular service. And if you then look at it in slightly more detail, in a professional service organization, each level within the professional service, the layers within that professional service organization will have a particular rate that is allocated to them. So as an example, again, I'm an associate 3. My rate for the work that I'm doing is $300 an hour. It took me 2 hours to draft the contract. So for an associate 3, it will cost you $600 for that contract. If, however, it is a significantly complex piece of work, you may say you actually need the assistance of a partner. The partner has 20 years experience. The firm will charge that partner out at a higher billable rate of $1,000 an hour. It took the partner 3 hours to do the work. The bill to you is $3,000. in any kind of construction, you will then have things like blended rates where both the partner and the associate three worked on the matter. You won't necessarily get a bill for a combination of $1,000 and $300, but in fact, a blended rate of, say, $900 for the combined work that was done. But at the end of the day, any invoice that you receive is calculated with reference to the number of hours that has been worked on your matter multiplied by a particular rate. That, in short, is the billable hour. And you are 100% correct, and everyone acknowledges that the billable hour underpins large sections of the professional service sector in the way in which they engage commercially with their clients. At the moment, I would estimate that if you were to look across the sector, the billable hour in one form or another underpins about 80% of the way in which they engage with their clients. And I say one form or another because there is a lot of talk about alternative pricing models, alternative billing rates. But if you actually analyze those and you work out how the professional service firms are calculating those alternative billing models, underpinning those is the billable hour. So in estimating what a flat fee might be, as an example, we can talk about that in more detail, but very often you'll hear discussions about flat fee arrangements where going into the transaction, the professional service firm will say, well, the transaction will cost you $15,000. It's a flat fee. But if you interrogate that a little bit more carefully, you will find that in estimating that $15,000 flat fee, the professional service firm has worked out how many hours it will take the professionals to deliver that transaction, multiplied it, applied some kind of either a discounting or a markup or a premium rating, and come up with the estimate of $15,000. But underpinning it is the billable hour. It underpins everything.
Knowing now that it underpins everything and your estimate there, 80%, I think actually might be somewhat conservative.
Yep.
Something that I think is quite interesting there is it is then pervasive. It permeates the sector. And really then what that does in my mind is it brings up the concept of path dependence. What that means is that past decisions significantly limit and impact future options. So what I'm talking about there is if you're a fan of Jeff Bezos, let's say, he's very well known for having sort of two primary decision paths, one stream where they are reversible, and then there's another stream where you go down it, and that's the path that you're following now. Path dependence more speaks to that second option, whereby you are very much limited and locked in given your past options. Obviously, as we've mentioned, you can't just rip the billing model that is in existence now straight out, but there are significant areas of weakness with it and criticism. Rob, specifically with reference to Gen AI, because it is so impactful, what is it there that people are beginning to see begin to fracture the armor of the billable hour? And why is it that we are saying that potentially firms need to look a little bit more closely on how it is that they engage with clients with respect to their billing them moving forward?
I would go a step further than that. And I would say that we are at a point in time where sections of the work that is done by the sector is going to be so materially impacted by technology that the billable hour for those sections of the business is simply going to be inappropriate. And clients will simply not accept the idea that they are paying by the hour for work that is delivered by technology. What I am suggesting is that there is going to be a disconnect between the way in which the services are delivered and the current billing model. And yes, we are seeing some firms dealing with that already. There are some firms that are taking steps to say, all right, there is a different way in which we need to price certain transactional work, certain work that we are delivering. But even those firms that are sort of at the forefront of the conversation are being quite careful to always ensure that the commercial model that underpins the transactions isn't broken. And I think that's wise, and clearly that is a very careful and appropriate response to the changing dynamics that we're seeing. But we need to just recognize the fact that every element of the business model is underpinned by the billable hour. you are quite correct in saying you can't simply pull off the plaster and put something else in place, because what is it that's going to happen if you suddenly find you aren't able to price what you're currently doing effectively to cover your existing, as an example, cost base? So if you've committed yourself to significant expense on the understanding that your revenue is going to be linked to the billable hours that you are able to generate in a particular year, and you suddenly find that those billable hours actually don't generate the revenue because the measurement of revenue needs to change because the billable hour is no longer the appropriate model, or rather the appropriate method, you've got a real potential problem on your hand if your expense base actually doesn't allow you to adjust your revenue stream in a way that is going to provide you with the protection you would have had from the billable hour model. So there are certainly some fundamental challenges to the model. I'm not suggesting that the billable hour is going to disappear completely. I don't think it will. I don't think it needs to, and I don't think it is going to disappear in the future. I think it will always be a measurement that is appropriate for certain types of work. The question is it going to be appropriate for all types of work? And the answer to that, in my view, is absolutely not. So the question is, how do you find a different pricing method to actually allow you to continue to generate the work, but be paid appropriately? You mention efficiency, and herein lies the irony. Let's assume that someone arrives on Earth and they're looking at all sorts of different sectors, and they say, well, what's the professional service sector all about? And they look at it and someone says, we are efficient in the way in which we deliver services to our clients. And that person who knows nothing about anything says, well, how do you charge for that work? And the answer is, well, we charge by the hour. And our entire business model is based on how many hours we can charge for. And you can immediately see that disconnect at a fundamental level between efficiency on the one hand and a business model that is built and focused on charging as many billable hours as you can in any particular period, because that's where your revenue, that's where your profit comes from. Now, when you've suddenly got technology stepping in, technology can actually take some of the work that you were traditionally doing and can do it in a fraction of the time that it would take you to do, whether it's first drafts of contracts, whether it's reviewing documents, whether it's doing research, whatever it might be, it can actually deliver what would have taken a human an hour to do. It can now deliver in 5 minutes with possibly some application of human element to actually test it, make sure it's right. So the previous hour that you were going to charge for is now actually only taken 20 minutes, 30 minutes, half the time it would have taken. What do you do to close the gap of that additional half hour that you would have charged for that is no longer available to you in the form of revenue? So in fact, if you were to stick to the billable hour model and only bill for those 30 minutes that it's now taken you, rather than the hour that it would have taken you without the technology, you have lost 50% of your revenue on that particular piece of work. So the billable hour model simply does not stack up if you're going to apply it slavishly to work that is now influenced and affected by technology and is being done efficiently.
I'm going to quickly play fireman Jonathan here, because I don't want anyone to drop us some comments saying, are you accusing us of not, say, fulfilling our fiduciary duty or stringing our clients along for 17 additional hours of billing. We are not suggesting that. We're just
not at all
showcasing some of the potential weaknesses that the billable model has. You made mention there of the economic woes and the very functional woes. But something that I think we need to discuss as well is something that you alluded to, or it existed on the periphery of what you were saying, and that has got to do with culture, it has to do with leadership, and it has to do with management. A lot of companies, and I'm specifically looking at you, United States law firms, are locking themselves into incredibly rigid scenarios in which they are relying on that money.
Expense basis.
Exactly. You can't then very well go to your partners and say, Hi, everyone. Just to let you know, we're shifting entirely away from the billable hour and we're going to an entirely new system because people will lose their minds, and rightly so. That isn't necessarily only a risky step financially and from a business perspective. It is an incredibly scary situation for those, specifically equity partners, who now have their entire worldview changed. How is it that people can even begin to bridge this culture gap, this mindset gap, to say, listen, we understand this is new, this is scary in some ways, but it is something that we need to do? And I think something that's interesting there is we often talk about leaders and leadership not being a democratic process. And whilst that is difficult from a partnership model, and it's definitely something that we will cover in our next episode, leadership in professional services. But for now, leadership is not a democratic process. At some point, they need to put their foot down. How is it, though, that you suggest that they can at least begin to have this conversation? And I would argue that it's a conversation that they probably needed to begin having about 10 years ago. But we are where we are now. Things are changing at truly an astronomic pace now. And it's not something that we can say, okay, let's go back 10 years and let's really rehash this. It's happening now. How is it then that people can take it forward?
You're spot on. And unfortunately, this is not something that the professional service sector is going to be able to control in the sense of the pace of change. I think it will be driven and dictated now by the clients. I think that clients have traditionally understood the billable hour. It has been the easiest way of actually dealing with their professional service providers. They've understood it. The professional service providers have understood it. They've clothed it in various forms, flat fees, alternative fee arrangements, and the like. But everyone has felt comfortable with a billable hour because coming up with an alternative is difficult, and it is difficult to understand. So people have been cautious about approaching it. Now, however, you have a very real commercial reality. You have the looming application of technology that will demonstrably show that efficiency can be delivered by the application of technology. And it is not something that is hidden. It is not something that is in a black box that no one really understands, and that the clients don't understand what the professional service firms are doing. And the professional service firms can, you know, be very careful about how they actually do it to avoid changing the commercial model. It is visible. It's visible to everybody. It's visible to CEOs, CFOs, COOs, GCs, and the like. So the pace of change, I think, is going to be dictated by the clients. If I can, just give you a very specific example. It's not specific to the professional service sector, but it is a very, very salutary example of how visible these things are. And that is the publication this week of the example of Klarna. Klarna goes to OpenAI and says, we want a chatbot. OpenAI delivers an AI-powered chatbot to Klarna. And in its first month of operation, it answers 2.3 million client queries. The equivalent number of queries would have taken 700 full-time employees to deal with. It is five times faster. It has 25% less repeat reviews. And it adds, on that construction, $40 million to the profit of Klarna over a course of a year. I mean, if it continues on that basis. Now, that's a very direct, visible example of how this technology can improve efficiency. Now, apply that across the board to the professional service sector and realize that it is a knowledge-based system, so it is going to improve efficiency. And then ask yourself the question, are clients going to say, well, you know, we understand that it's going to be difficult for you as the professional service sector to adjust your commercial model. We're prepared to give you 3 years, 5 years, whatever it takes to allow you to adjust very slowly over time at a pace that is acceptable to you, and, you know, we'll be patient. They won't do that, and they won't do that for a number of reasons. Number one, they will be pressurized by their boards and by ultimately by their shareholders to make sure that their entire environment is benefiting from the efficiency play that the technology delivers. The cost of delivery becomes an issue that they are going to be looking at. Number two, there are going to be those firms in the professional service sector that actually do make the changes very quickly. They start creating digital firms that allow them to deliver services efficiently and price them efficiently. So your competitors are going to be driving the pace of change and dictating the pace of change. And number three, you've got a new form of competitor coming into the market in the form of digital competitors. And there are a number of law firms and professional services firms that are now being built entirely on the back of technology rather than having technology applied to the existing model. And then you've got agile competitors in the form of, in the legal sector, alternative legal service providers, as an example, that operate a different model, have access to cash, and are built and understand technology right from the outset. So all of those factors mean that the pace of change is going to be accelerating. And unless you can actually come up with a way that allows you to match that pace of change in the way in which you price your services and deliver the services, you are going to start falling off the bandwagon. And I simply cannot imagine that when clients have the technology available to themselves and when clients have access to the competitors in the environment that are adapting to and adopting the technology and moving at pace to change the way in which they deliver the service and price the service, that they will say, that's absolutely fine. We are still prepared to give you the time because we've got a long relationship with you. If it takes you 2, 3, 5 years to do it, don't worry. We'll continue to pay you the billable hour that you have been charging us for the same service that you've been charging us. I simply don't see that as happening, and I don't think anyone would suggest that it is going to happen. I think that what professional service firms need to be thinking about now is how they take their existing business and structure that business in a way that provides them with protection whilst they start changing the existing. As an example, setting up in parallel to their existing business, a digital business, where you can start taking out the components of your traditional business that are going to be severely impacted by technology and moving those across into a new commercial structure and pricing them accordingly and selling them to the clients. That gives you all sorts of potential opportunities. You can take the benefits that you get out of the digital structure and reverse them into the traditional model so that you start both businesses start benefiting from the application of technology. You can, as an example, start looking at moving into adjacent businesses that delivers you an additional new revenue stream, which then protects the fact that you're going to have to change the existing to deal with the implication or the application of technology. So you've got some mitigating revenue coming in a different form that is not going to be as adversely affected by the technology. So there are any, and you know, those are just two of the examples, you know, the ideas that we've been talking about, but there are any number of ways that traditional professional service firms can start making adjustments that will protect them against the evolution of the billable hour model and allow them to start restructuring their existing business in a way that is more suitable to the modern ways of doing business. And that would include, at the top end, you've got real expertise insulated from technology, billable hour, probably still the right model to use. Those parts of the business where you have a combination of human and technology, it's a combination of billable hour and different way of pricing. So there are any number of permutations here that they can be looking at, but certainly from my perspective, the most important thing is they've got to be starting to look at ways in which they can mitigate the risk of having the rug pulled from underneath them by continuing to stick to a model that is no longer acceptable to clients across the board.
When we get back, I want to go back to the future and really look at what this will mean for the industry 10, 15, or even 5 years from now. Welcome back. You have joined us in the year 2028. The changes have either been made or they haven't. Our view and what we can see is that those firms who failed to make the change to their current operations and the billable hour really are struggling. Some of them have not even made it. Rob, talking to the firms of the past way back when in 2024, why is it that we see what we are seeing right now? Why is it that they really should have listened and started to make the changes back then?
I think, ironically, we're in the fortunate position now. Well, professional service firms are in the fortunate position to be able to see very clearly what needs to be done. This is not a surprise. This is not something that is invisible and everyone is sort of thinking to themselves, I wonder if something is going to happen. We can see it happening and we can see where it is likely to go to. And you have previously said, and I think quite correctly, you've said and you've quoted that adage that says, if there is a 1% chance of it something happening that is going to impact your business, you need to approach it on the basis that the certainty is 100%. You can't take the chance. And in this instance that we are talking about, looking forward, anybody can see that there is going to be some change coming into the sector. The sector is going to change. And the sector has been very fortunate in the sense that it has not been disrupted yet. This is not about waiting till 2028 and saying, oh, we didn't realize that that's what we should have done. This is about looking forward and saying, we can see it coming. It may not be as bad as we think it's going to be, but it is going to happen. And accordingly, you can start taking the steps. Why do you think, or rather, why would one want to take the steps rather than sort of holding on to the past and saying, let's double down, let's focus on lateral hiring because that's the way we effectively buy in more billable hours. Let's focus on driving everyone as hard as we can to try and find additional billable hours. Why would you rather say, all right, let's acknowledge the fact that the billable hour model is no longer going to be of application across the board. It will still be relevant, but we need to start making adjustments. And if you go through them and in no particular order, and this is not an exhaustive list, number one, talent. If you accept the fact that you need talent in your business, where do you think the talent is going to go? Will the talent go to the firm that is showing itself capable of understanding the changes in the sector, is focused on modernizing its business, and is hyper-focused on what the clients are expecting? I think we can agree that the talent will go to the firm that is looking at the future and making the adjustments.
Of course.
It is unlikely that talent is going to go to the firm that says, no, in fact, we're just going to double down. We're not going to embrace the changes. We're not going to change the commercial model. This is what we're going to do. Let's stick to our knitting. So talent is clearly an issue. Secondly, clients, as we've already discussed, are not going to say, we find that an attractive proposition. Clients go to professional services firms for a number of reasons. One, of course, is the skill. Secondly, is the relationship that they may have with individual partners within the professional services firms. But there is a different element to it, and that is that clients want to be seen to be working with the professional service firms that are at the top of their game. And in this instance, being at the top of your game is those firms that are embracing the opportunities, recognizing both the opportunities and the challenges, and showing themselves capable of adapting, changing, modernizing to deal with those. So clients will be saying, you know, thanks very much, but the firm that's sticking to its knitting and not recognizing these changes, that's not a firm that we find particularly appealing. So clients will be saying, you know, no interest, we'd rather go with the firms that are modernizing. And there are any number of additional reasons for why now is the time to start making the changes. If as a managing partner of a professional services firm, if as part of a management team within a professional services firm, I see all of this happening around me. I can see where it is likely to go to. Even if I accept there is only a 10 or 20% chance of the sector being disrupted, and I nevertheless say, no, I'm ignoring that. It's not going to change my business. I'm going to stick to my knitting. I'm not sure I would feel particularly comfortable in 2028 looking at my partners if the business has survived and saying to them, sorry, I saw it coming. I didn't think it was necessary to make the change. And unfortunately, this is where we now sit. So there is a fiduciary element to it. And I don't want to get too hung up on that, but there is a fiduciary element to that that I think management teams need to be very careful of thinking about. I think that the firms that are going to be adopting a view that says, look, our approach simply has to be, we just have to hire as many laterals as we can in the hope of buying up the book of business. That will provide us with some leeway because we'll have more billable hours this year and hopefully next year. I think those are the ones that are going to be so hyper-focused on the wrong things that they're going to miss the right things, which will then skew the pitch for them, as it were, or create a problem for themselves. This is not something that is not known. This is not something where we can say, as we did 10 years ago in the sector, is it really going to make the change? Just go back to that Klarna example that we discussed earlier. Just stop to think about that as an example and apply your mind to the application of technology of that sort into the sector and appreciate the changes that it's going to drive, the changes that it will drive, and recognize the fact that you can't simply shut down and say, let's stick to the billable hour and hope like crazy it's going to work. I'm not suggesting the billable hour will no longer be an appropriate way of pricing certain elements of the business. It will. It will continue to be and will no doubt continue into the foreseeable future. But that doesn't imply bury your head in the sand, don't make any changes, and the billable hour is the only model we need to understand. But there are other elements to it, and that is, you know, I read an article that the suggestion was, yes, we recognize the fact that the billable hour will need to be adjusted, but we can't really make the changes because that would mean we would have to change our compensation models and our performance management models. Now, that is not, frankly, an acceptable answer. If you recognize that the billable hour model is going to have to be adjusted or changed, the answer cannot be, knowing that, we're not going to do something because it will mean difficult decisions for us in regard to our compensation models and our performance management models. That is not what I would call responsible management. All of those are issues that are going to have to be addressed. Performance management, compensation, absolutely right. We can see it coming, and now we've got the time to make those adjustments. If we don't start making those adjustments and it happens around us, I don't want to be sitting in that hot seat.
I think that is the perfect point to wrap up today's episode, as it leads nicely as a springboard into next week's episode, where we're going to really explore leadership and strategic leadership in particular, because I think something that is so often lost in today's world is the adversarial nature of strategy, and that every strategic choice needs to be framed as such. And I think the billable hour is something that definitely, there's so much strategy and strategic decision-making that leaders need to make now to ensure that they remain competitive, even survive going forward. From both Rob and myself, it's been great having you. We look forward to next week's episode.
As we close this episode, we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us through the ever-changing landscape of professional strategy. Remember, the world of professional services is continuously evolving, and success lies in anticipating and adapting to these changes. Our conversations here are designed to stimulate debate, encourage questions, and shed some light on the conversations the sector should be having. This is the Aurelian Future Strategy Podcast, where the future of professional strategy comes into focus. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to bringing you more cutting-edge insights in our next episode.